All right, as always, we're joined now by Chad Pennington. It is the holiday season, Chad, so Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to you and your family. What do the Penningtons have in store for them this weekend?
Oh, wow, Eric, we've got all kinds of good things. We just came back from our trip from New York, had a great time. Love going to the city during the holiday season, and now we have our West Virginia side of the family coming in for a few days. They'll be leaving out Christmas Eve, and then we'll celebrate Christmas with the boys here in Kentucky. And then the following Wednesday, we will head to Tennessee to see the Tennessee side of the family. So, yeah, we'll be moving around quite a bit.
So you went to the game Saturday night, Jets-Dolphins, and then I didn't even know this. You stayed in the city for a couple days with your family. Did you have your wife, Robin, and the kids with you? And what did you guys take part in, because there's so many things to do in this great city?
Absolutely. So we, after the boys love the game, they love seeing Brandon Marshall on the sideline. Could not believe that Brandon remembered them in Florida, because Brandon and I were neighbors, and so he would see us out, the boys and I, out on the golf cart or whatever. So they were completely pumped about that, and even had their mom take them to get some Brandon Marshall gear during the game in the stadium. So they're all decked out in their 15 jerseys. And so they're pretty excited about that. And they enjoyed the game other than the outcome. But and then we went to the Christmas Spectacular on Sunday and enjoyed that and ate at the Palm afterwards. And then on Monday, we spent most of the day in Bryant Park, ice skating, shopping, just walking around the city and having a good time. So we took our time and made sure we took in the city.
How's Pennington, the Pennington family, on ice skates?
Well, we manage. we manage not to fall, so that's our number one goal. So we completed that goal. We did a good job.
Now, did you have an opportunity to tell B. Marsh about this, that the kids, that your sons are big Brandon fans? And that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He was showing me a picture of his twins on the field, and as he was trying to show us, his phone went out. It went dead, so we didn't get a chance to see it. So on Sunday, I sent him a picture of the three boys Saturday night decked out in their Marshall gear. And then he sent me a picture of his twins, which they're absolutely gorgeous. And so, yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's outstanding. How many people recognize you in the city when you're walking around? You were in New York for a little bit of time there, and a lot of things going on, and a lot of celebrities always out. And now we got the president-elect who's he's holding court in the city, as we all know, and changing traffic patterns as well. But what about you, man? How many people or Jets fans are coming up to you on the street?
Well, Jets fans, actually, they recognize me sometimes in the city. The great thing about the city is half the people in the city don't even know football exists, so they're not really worried about it. And then the other half, you know, they'll take double looks at you, because they certainly don't expect you to be in New York, but then they'll take a double look and then give you that look like, are you? And then you kind of shake your head that you are. And so, you know, it's great. It's great to be out and about and just talk with Jet fans, talk with football fans in general. I think because when you're playing, you deal with so much negativity around what you do. After you're done playing and you're out on the street talking with fans, it's neat to get a true sense of their appreciation for what you did. And especially if you handled your business in a professional manner, I think fans appreciate that and respect that, and then they relay that message to you. So that is always something that I enjoy listening to fans' perspectives on.
Well, that's great. Really happy you guys got a chance to go into the city and spend a couple days there, and now you got some family time coming up, and we got a full weekend of football ahead. Christmas Eve, Jets, Patriots in Foxborough. You mentioned Marshall before, so why don't we jump to Brandon really quick? He said this week in the locker room, I know I can play at a high level. It just hasn't happened this year given the situations. Last year, 109 catches and 1,502 yards. He's going to turn 33 in March. So far this season, 57 catches, 760 receiving yards. Bryce Petty and him had a lot of difficulty hooking up against the Miami Dolphins. Your take on Brandon's season so far this year, and how difficult, frankly, is it for a receiver the way the Jets have been forced to juggle quarterbacks this year?
Well, it's very difficult, and I would say that, you know, playing receiver when you are experiencing changes at the quarterback position is probably the most difficult position to be in, because unfortunately you don't control your production sometimes. And when you do have your chances, you have to take advantage of every opportunity and make the best out of every opportunity you have, which is very difficult to do when you're not getting a lot of opportunities. And so, you know, for him, I mean, most receivers, other than his caliber of receiver, would be happy with 57 catches and over 800 yards. So, but we're so used to him, you know, producing at a much higher level, we think that this is a failure. I don't necessarily think that this season has been a failure for Brandon Marshall per se, and I certainly don't think that this is a nail in the coffin, so to speak, on his career. I think it's been a difficult difficult situation for him and season for him. What I've been most proud of him, the younger Brandon Marshall, you would have heard more from in the media, and there have been more negativity centered around him, and the complaints and the griping and things like that would have been more toward the forefront with a season like this. And now you're seeing a much more mature professional Brandon Marshall that does understand the situation, that's trying to keep things in perspective and just focus on what he can do to continue to get better and help the organization. So I think that's a huge step in the right direction for him, and kudos for him being able to mature in that fashion. So I think he's going to be fine in the future. I think he still needs to be a Jet. He's going to be a very productive Jet. And I know that he loves living in this area and just loves the culture and the city of New York in general. So, you know, I look for him to be able to come back with a much better season next year, as long as the Jets are able to find that guy behind center that can get him the ball.
Yeah, one of the things he pointed out this week was, hey, if you look at the matchups I had with Richard Sherman and Patrick Peterson, and you look at the film, you can see I still can play. So the thing about the receiver position is, you know, as a quarterback is, hey, sometimes those guys are open and they don't get the ball, period. I mean, sometimes how well you play, it's not reflected in stats. And I guess you could say that at every position, but the wide receiver position, the number one thing we're all looking at, obviously, is yards, touchdowns, yards per catch, yak, those kind of things. Those kinds of things.
Well, there's no question about that, Eric. I remember in 2007 when I had the high ankle sprain and played 8 games, and the results weren't there as a team. I remember Brian Schottenheimer coming to me after the season and saying, you know, you actually played better in 07 than you did in 2006 when it went to the playoffs. But because the results weren't there, and there were a couple plays that, you know, turned out to be disasters for us, that, you know, that was overlooked and was hard to see through all of that. And that's one of the biggest challenges as a professional, is to really stay in the center of your focus and your world, and make sure that you're doing the things necessary to put yourself in a position to be successful, understanding that sometimes, and a lot of times, the result is completely out of your hands. And sometimes when you can put those two things together, you have great results, and then other times when those two things don't mix, you're playing really good ball, you're being fundamentally sound, you're running some of the best routes, making some of the best throws, doing some of the best things you've ever done in your career, but in the stat sheet, it's not showing up. And so on the outside looking in, it looks as if somebody's not being as productive, but on the inside looking out, you can see that you're being a much more productive player.
Yeah, and the older, wiser Brandon Marshall, who again turns 33 in March, I believe, he said it too. I also judge my production based on how the defense is playing me. So if the safety's well over to my side, basically, and I'm getting double covered a lot, that's going to open opportunities up for other guys. So we'll just see what happens here in the off season for Brandon and the Jets. But two games to go, and Jets Nation is probably very angry with me right now because I'm burying the lead. Bryce Petty. We talk about him every week, about his development, about his progress, about some things he has to work on. We're going to get to all that. But let's get to the first play of the fourth quarter against Miami. He's in the shotgun. He takes a snap, and all of his linemen don't move other than the center, Wesley Johnson. Ndamukong Suh is lined up at defensive end, actually. He comes along free release. On the right edge, he gets a pop. On the opposing side is Cameron Wake, who had a tremendous game against the Jets, unfortunately. He finishes the hit. Those guys knock Bryce Petty out of the game. He gets treated afterwards. Fortunately for the Jets, all the tests came out negative, both on Sunday and Monday. He's practiced fully this week. He's going to be ready to go. How does that play happen? Because you've been there taking snaps before. One of the things that Bryce said in the locker room this week was Wesley apologized to him about it and actually made him homemade chocolate chip cookies. But just from your view, because you've been out there and you know what actually happens pre-snap, getting set, calling out protections, and also making sure everybody's got the call, how did that happen?
You know, that's a tough situation, Eric, and kudos for Bryce for standing in there and taking such a big hit and actually completing the football, by the way, down the field to Robbie Anderson. And it's one of those situations, I think, as a veteran quarterback would have either just thrown the ball right into the ground, thinking that it was going to be a penalty or something, or tried to scramble and throw it away. But he really stood in there and just tried to take a shot down the field and unfortunately took a shot himself. And I never discourage that, because I think in the game of football, it is a physical game. And as a quarterback, you have to have courage to stand in there and deliver the football and still take the hit. And, you know, it always bothered me when I would see quarterbacks duck and do different things to protect themselves, which I understand. But at the same time, to be able to make those tough throws is part of being a quarterback. And so it's just one of those situations where obviously the center felt like he made the mistake. From my vantage point, I thought it may have been a penalty or something. It was a very odd play and unfortunate that somebody has to take such a hit and be injured in the meantime, because I wanted to see in that fourth quarter again if Bryce could do some things to help get the Jets at least back into the game a little bit and make some plays. You know, the first three quarters were very odd to me. I'd never seen such a game turn from 13 to 10 to 34 to 10 in a matter of minutes. And so it was very hard to be able to truly evaluate Bryce's performance because you didn't get a lot of opportunities to say, okay, here's what needs to happen, here's what should have happened, and here's what did happen.
That's a fascinating take, and we'll get to that 21-point Dolphins run in the third quarter here in a moment. But back to Petty. I asked you last week, what did you want to see from him as he made that second consecutive start Saturday night in primetime against the Dolphins? And number one, you said a fast start. You thought that it would show you that here's a guy who does have confidence and he learned from what happened in San Francisco, and let's see if he can move that offense down the field. And boom, he did just that, Chad. The Jets went down the field on first possession. He got the big gain with a little short pass to Bilal Powell, who gained more than 20 with his yards after the catch. And then he culminates the drive with a 40-yard scoring pass to Robbie Anderson. Then the second possession, the Jets are right there in scoring territory once again. And that's when Cameron Wake started his big night with the strip sack, and I believe Ndamukong Suh actually recovered that one as well. So the two paired up there early in a ball game. But did you like the way he started?
I did, and that's exactly what I thought of as well, Eric. When the Jets went down and scored and got the first touchdown, that was the type of start that you were looking for. Looked like his feet were much calmer in the pocket on that first drive and even in the second drive as well. And he was working through his reads. So that was nice to see. You can still see, based upon that second drive and even further into the game, how the protection thing is still something that he's working through, as well as the offensive line. They're working through some of those things. The Dolphins were doing a really good job of testing the gaps, the A gap in between the center and the guard, the B gap in between the guard and the tackle. And when they are when the defense is doing that, there's a lot of communication errors that can happen between line and running back and quarterback, thinking, well, I thought this, and this is what happened. And it can cause some miscommunication or at least some hesitancy in protection from all three areas, running back, quarterback, and offensive line. And that's exactly what happened. And that's why you saw some of those free rushers coming off the edge sometimes, because the Dolphins were doing a really good job of what we call bluffing into the middle gaps and the A and B gaps, and then sending edge rushers off the edge to confuse the protection scheme. So that was something that certainly has to be worked on and discussed from Bryce's standpoint, that he feels much more comfortable about that.
How does Bryce get to a point where that becomes better? Because this is a tough situation. I know you said it's a great opportunity, and it is, and nobody's going to argue against that. But the projected 2016 New York Jets offensive line in the summer was left tackle Ryan Clady, left guard James Carpenter, center Nick Mangold, right guard Brian Winters, and right tackle Breno Giacomini. The only guy who's still playing right now is left guard James Carpenter. The other four guys are on injured reserve, and now the Jets are going to be starting somebody new again this week because Brian Winters went on injured reserve, so it's either going to be Brent Qualley comes back in the starting lineup. Remember earlier this year, he was the guy alternating reps at right tackle with Ben Ijelana because Breno Giacomini started the year on the PUP list. Or it could be Dakota Dozier, who was an extra lineman for the Jets because they were giving rookie Brandon Schell, who was making his first start at right tackle last week. They had I call it the bulldozer package. They went with some extra linemen sometimes, and they brought in Dakota to help out as well. Or it could be a guy like Craig Watts, who was just recently on the practice squad. So just how difficult is this for Petty? I had no excuses, but just what you're talking about with protections and how the Patriots will test them this week again. And I'm not saying they have the fearsome foursome, but you know that this team, maybe more than any other team in the National Football League, capitalizes on your inexperiences, your inexperience maybe, and also they are very opportunistic.
Well, it is difficult. And the reason that it's difficult is when you have those changes in the offensive line, and you reduce the experience of the offensive line, unfortunately, the only person that can help that is the quarterback position, meaning that an experienced veteran quarterback can then take some of those calls into his own hands and make up for that lack of experience and make some of those calls himself. I'm not so sure that Bryce is ready for that. And so, you know, trying to evaluate Bryce is difficult because you would like to say, okay, our line is shored up. Let the line take care of the blocking schemes and let Bryce just focus on making reads, dishing the football, and having a clean pocket. Well, unfortunately, it's not that way. And so I'm not so sure how you can truly evaluate him knowing that most young quarterbacks aren't going to be able to completely decipher every protection and get your team into every good look into every right call, and you need the help of a veteran center and a veteran offensive line to help a young quarterback do that. Some young quarterbacks can, there's no doubt about it, but most cannot at this point in their career, second year in, and only a couple of starts under their belt. So that's a difficult situation because the only answer to an inexperienced line, making sure that they at least know who they have in the protection, much less be able to block and perform the protection. The only person that can help in that is the quarterback. And when you have a young quarterback that is learning at the same time, that's much more difficult.
Well, then how do you balance it? This is fascinating to me because, like you said, is that it all goes together with the lineman and the quarterback and the protections, but you have so much experience up front. And some of the guys have played years in the National Football League, but the continuity, as you know, it's got to be there for an offensive line. And right now, the Jets, not by their choosing, but by injury, you know, they're mixing up as many matchups as they can. But in the evaluation process, while you're trying to continue to win, how do you put Bryce in a comfortable spot without saying, wow, your head's going to be spinning because you've got to worry about protection so much? What do you do if you're Chan Gailey and Todd Bowles and quarterback coach Kevin Petullo right now?
In my mind, you do two things, and they're actually the complete opposite of each other. They're at they're at the end of the extremes as far as the protection schemes. One thing that you do, you would completely empty out the backfield and only block five. And then that way, the lineman and the quarterback know, we're taking these five. Anybody else is yours, and you find a quick route or a hot route to get rid of it. So you're not having to worry about, okay, six and seven-man protection. The other way is you go to the opposite end of the spectrum and say, we're blocking up 7 to 8, and there are no hot reads, there are anything. We're running two-man routes, possibly a three-man route or a two-man route with a check down. And so you just work at the ends of those spectrums instead of working in the middle with the six-man protections, which can be much more difficult for an offensive line and a quarterback as well as a running back to try to decipher, because there's so many more moving parts and different scenarios in the six-man protections compared to a maximum protection or a minimum protection, where everybody's out, there's nobody involved in the protection scheme with a five-man protection other than the quarterback and the line, or the maximum protection where everybody's involved and the only way that they can completely get to the quarterback is completely play cover zero, which means there are no safeties in the back and a straight man-to-man, and the ball has to come out quickly. So when you're in a situation like that, or like the Jets are in right now, I would imagine that you kind of work at the ends of the spectrum of the protection schemes rather than working with all of them.
Which one do you prefer for this second-year passer, or you putting your coaching hat on, would you mix it up? Sometimes you just go the five, and sometimes you go the max, so you don't have to worry about it. Would you find a balance, or would you favor one heading into this game?
Well, you still have to find the balance because you can't just live on the edge in an empty set or a five-man protection set all the time because the edge rushers in this league are just too good, and eventually they're going to get to the quarterback. So you have to find a balance. Typically what you would want to do is you use the five-man protection to get the ball out of his hand quickly. The other thing that five-man protections do for a young quarterback is you use more spread formations, which now simplify the looks typically as far as it spreads the defense out and makes things a little bit more or less complicated, where the defense can't hide as many coverages as they can in tighter formations and things like that. And so that allows the quarterback to have a simple thought process, you know, focus on 1 to 2 reads and be able to get the ball out of his hand quickly with quick footwork. If you're trying to push the ball down the field, then you would want to use the maximum protections to give the quarterback more time, have deeper drops, 7-step drops, play action drops where they're 9 to 10 yards deep in the pocket, but they don't have to worry about free blitzers coming that aren't picked up. You're using 7 and 8 men in the protection. You should be able to block up most schemes other than the scheme where if a defender has a running back or a tight end and then tight end blocks and then they just add to the blitz, that's something different. But for the most part, the quarterback is rest assured that there is good, solid protection. You're trying to push the ball down the field because of that protection. So it's still a balance, but there's reasons why you're using one scheme or the other to try to attack the defense.
This is football graduate class. This is not football 101, bottom line, because I know a lot of folks are listening to this, and they appreciate your analysis because you're really taking us in to a coach's room, to a quarterback's mind, and giving us some light as far as what's going on out there between the quarterback, his offensive coordinator, the offensive line, etc. Bilal Powell, 11 catches against the Dolphins. Phenomenal. 162 yards from scrimmage, total yards of offense. Some of those catches, was Bryce favoring him maybe too much? I'm not taking a knock at him. I'm asking you from a quarterback's perspective, because it seemed like the pressure was getting there and he was getting it out no matter what, and Bilal was always going to be there. Because some of those gains, while Paul gives you so much explosion and he always seems to have a knack for finding the sticks and he gets every ounce out of every play he possibly can, some of those plays ended up being behind the line or right around the line of scrimmage. So your take on Bilal getting 11 receptions Saturday night?
Well, I think that with the nature of what's happening with the Jets offense and with the injuries that have occurred, obviously his number is being called more. And the reason that it is number one, he's very explosive with the ball in his hands. He creates so much yards after the catch, and he's able to take a simple pass route or simple completion and turn it into first down and turn it into big plays. And so it would be crazy for Chan Gailey and the Jets staff not to try to find ways to get this guy the ball. He is and has become the one explosive part of the offense, and you don't have to do a lot to be able to see those explosion plays, and so that's important. I also think that with the young quarterback, he allows the young quarterback to say, you know, if it's not what I think it's going to be down the field, I can check it to 29 and he can give me some yards. There's a safety net there. There's a security blanket there and a feeling for the quarterback saying 29 can help me big time if I get into a pickle. I think that's important. Finally, I think you have seen this with a lot of teams across the league. They are actually using the short passing game just like you would the screen game or the run game. And a lot of times teams will throw a short pass, and because the pass is thrown so quickly and so short, the receivers are actually blocking and preparing to block down the field instead of run a route. And so some of the passes that you've seen Bilal Powell catch from Bryce Petty are actually designed plays strictly to Bilal, and they're actually, it's like an extended run play. Although the ball is in the air, it's really a run play. They're just finding a different way to run the football instead of just a conventional way of handing it off. So it would be a short pass to 29, but the receivers aren't running routes. They are preparing to block around that 5 to 7 yard mark, and they can do that as long as the receiver catches the ball first before they engage on their block. I've seen this with the Jets, and I've seen this across the league. It's a creative way that offenses are trying to have an extension of the run game without having to call a run, and a lot of teams are finding success with that, including the Jets.
How do you explain the 21-point run in the third? You got the block punt that changes the whole tenor of the ball game. It's 13-10, like you mentioned before. Block punt recovered. The touchdown is 20-10. I believe that was Wald Akins, Dolphins reserve safety. Petty was lamenting after the game, Chad, that he thought there were a couple plays to be made down the field, and specifically you can think about the Lippitt interception where Robbie Anderson clearly had to step up the Jets sideline, and he went up top. And a lot of times I think Bryce is going to hit that ball. You underthrew him, and Lippitt came up with the interception. And then you had the breakdown in coverage on just a short, simple crossing route. Jarvis Landry gets the ball. I don't know if that was a little slant or a cross. And Marcus Williams right there, he's unfortunately can't come up with the tackle, and Calvin Pryor did not have an angle on the play. And then in a matter of no time, in a game where the Jets showed some juice early, some mojo, they were playing with a lot of energy. In a matter of no time, it was 34-10. How can you explain it?
Well, I think it's actually a simple thought process and a simple explanation. When you have a big play like a block punt, a turnover, you have a swing in the momentum, somebody has to step up and make a play to stop the bleeding. And if you don't stop the bleeding, you bleed to death. And that's exactly what happened to the Jets. And so Bryce Petty is right. The one thing that I would be critical of him about in this game, and I hate to see it, but it was disappointing to see, was that he was unable to connect on the down-the-field passes. And there were three, two to Brandon Marshall, another one to Robbie Anderson, maybe two to Robbie Anderson, where they had beaten the one-on-one coverage on the outside and the balls were underthrown. And, you know, you're not looking for a 75 to 100% completion. You're actually looking between 25 and 40% completion percentage on those throws. And just think, if you hit one of those three or one of those four we're talking about, it probably changes the game. It may not change the outcome, but it certainly changes field position. It stops the bleeding. I mean, Bryce is exactly right. On the interception, Robbie Anderson had beaten the coverage. Even if that's an incomplete, you don't have another disaster play that followed a disaster play in the block punt. But with the completion there, you stop the bleeding. The ball's now on the other side of the 50. The Jets gain a little bit of momentum, and they answer, even with the field goal, they answer the block punt. And instead of it being going to 27-10, it's now 20-13, and you have a much better ball game. And so that's what has to happen, and that's what did not happen. The breakdown in coverage, it was man-to-man. It was a simple, what we call a short post or a slant route. It was a missed tackle, number one, and then an over-rotation by the free safety, number two, and a great player like Jarvis Landry turns that into 6 points. And so it was nothing that had anything to do with scheme. It just had to do with someone needed to make a play. The Dolphins capitalized on their momentum and made plays, and the Jets did not.
How do you keep this a ball game this weekend? Give me three keys as far as the Jets being in it. And I'm not talking about moral victories. I'm saying you've seen a couple times lately where the game has gotten away from the Jets. So I think what you're really trying to see here with as you continue to shuffle your lineups up front with the offensive line and you're working in a quarterback who's making his fourth NFL start and you're playing a lot of young guys defensively who are experiencing both ups and downs. No moral victories. They're going to Foxborough for a win. This team would like nothing better than just to get a win for Christmas. But, you know, if you're a fan and you're watching this game, what do you think are the three keys that the Jets are back in a situation like they were a few weeks ago against the Patriots, maybe with a fourth quarter lead and having a chance for a victory?
Defensively, I think it must be a bend but don't break mentality. You have to be able to have really good scoring defense, meaning that you've got to turn these touchdowns into field goals. How do you do that? Well, the recipe for Tom Brady is you have to hit him. You have to pressure him. You have to hit him. You have to make him as uncomfortable as possible. The Jets had some success with that. And the teams that have had success either competing with the Patriots or beating the Patriots, that's the key. To make him uncomfortable, to hit him, to be physical with him, to make sure he's on the ground more times than he's standing up, even if it's not a sack. I think that's important. So it has to be a bend but don't break mentality. You can't have big plays by Edelman, by Bennett, by LeGarrette Blount. I think the Patriots are going to try to come in and impose their will with Blount and then, you know, spread the ball around with a short passing game, get the ball out of Tom's hands quickly, let Edelman, Amendola, Lewis out of the backfield, let those guys move in space. That's typically been a recipe for the Patriots. Tom should be a little bit healthier than he was in the first game. So I think you'll see a much more active Tom Brady and not playing it so conservative. Offensively, I think it's about ball control. I think it's about time of possession. Some of the best defense against Tom Brady is that Tom Brady's on the sideline and you have a ball control offense. How do you do that? Well, the Patriots are going to focus on 29. They're going to focus on Bilal Powell. They believe, I think with what I've seen and what they'll see on film, they know that this is a guy who the Jets have relied upon heavily this year, that the quarterback relies upon heavily, and that the offense has. And so they're going to do things to focus taking him away. Patriots have always done a good job historically of making sure that your best, most productive players don't beat you, force the other guys to beat you. And if you beat them with the other guys, then they shake your hand and say, good job. But they think that you can't beat them with your other guys. That may bode well for Brandon Marshall. That may give him some more opportunity. If there's such a focus on Bilal Powell, it may create some more one-on-one opportunities for Brandon. And it'd be nice to see Brandon and Bryce hook up and have a nice, steady game. That has not happened. You can see that the chemistry is not there between the young quarterback and the veteran receiver, and so you would like to see some of that come to fruition. Finally, it's certainly going to be about turnovers, and that doesn't necessarily mean offensively, but also in the special teams department as well. And so if the Jets can have a turnover-free ball game, it will be a competitive game, and we'll have to see what happens.
Well, that was about as good as you're going to hear in the podcast world. That's Chad Pennington breaking it down for us. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you next year. Well, it's not next year yet. Our final show of the 2016 year will be next week. Thanks, Chad.
Okay, Eric. Thank you. Merry Christmas.